Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Emergency room visits have been cut in half during the coronavirus pandemic, according to the American College of Emergency Physicians. But apart from the virus, emergency rooms are also continuing to treat gunshot victims. The Gun Violence Archive found that there has been an increase in shootings nationwide, and Milwaukee is no exception. Champ Barton is a reporter for The Trace, a nonprofit newsroom focused on gun issues in America. He and a national team of journalists looked at the effects that safer-at-home orders have had on gun violence, including right here in Milwaukee. Champ joined Lake Effect's Julian Haida to discuss his team's findings in an article called When the Shootings Don't Stop.
Well, Champ, thanks so much for joining us on Lake Effect.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So you and The Trace did a study of how the coronavirus has affected gun violence in various American cities. We're in Milwaukee, which is a city that you focused on. What did you end up finding? Just kind of give us the broad strokes of your reporting about the effects of the coronavirus and all these shutdowns on gun violence in America's cities.
The broader trend was basically that while a lot of crime has declined as a result of the coronavirus, we don't know why, but largely probably because people are staying in and more people are home, that shootings have sort of resisted that trend, that shootings have continued to increase or stay on par with what they were like before the coronavirus reached the U.S. That wasn't true of every state, and we didn't do a firm analysis of Milwaukee's data because their data was not presented publicly in the same way as some of the other states we looked at. So the data that we're looking at is mostly from January through mid-April, which was around the time that the story ran. Now in Milwaukee, what we did have was the number of shootings that had occurred, and it does seem to be the case that the number of shootings is outpacing the number of shootings that were experienced in Milwaukee at this time last year, at least for shooting fatalities. It's just difficult to tell because the public data that Milwaukee provides does not allow us to do the same exact analysis we did for the other cities.
In the article, you suggest that some of this has to do with the fact that through safer at home and social distancing guidelines, a lot of intervention programs that stem the tide, or at least they argue stem the tide of gun violence, have gone away. People are sheltering in place. They can't do in-person interventions. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say they've gone away. They're still working really hard, if not harder than they have in the past. It's just that so much of their work depends on these face-to-face interventions where they're sitting down with someone and telling them, hey, listen, you know, we've seen the data. We know that you are particularly at risk of being shot or being involved in a shooting in some way. And, you know, when it's a police officer sitting in a room with you, along with an intervention worker who is from the same background, from the same city, and they're both telling you, listen, we care about you. We want you to do well. So please, can you, you know, stay out of this or drop this conflict or, you know, let this beef go. You know, that has a really powerful effect. When you take away that person-to-person interaction and you have to reach out via Facebook, or you have to try to call the family member to get a hold of the person, the work just becomes, and you know, we don't have data to prove this, but this is what a lot of these intervention workers think, is that the work just becomes a little bit less effective, or at the very least harder to do. And so that's sort of what they're facing now. And so, you know, we haven't confirmed that the increase in violence is a result of the decrease in the efficacy of the outreach work.
Then again, a lot of the outreach work is hard to prove in good times. I mean,
exactly.
I've been to events put on by violence prevention groups, and people always seem to want to play the devil's advocate and say, well, how do you know you're really helping? On the other hand, even though you say there isn't that much data, this does seem to provide the anecdotal basis that when people don't follow certain tested methods of violence prevention, because circumstances have changed, violence goes up.
For sure. I mean, it's an interesting sort of, you know, miniature case study, you could say, where one of the things that a lot of these intervention groups have struggled with for a long time is there has not been funding into gun violence research. And so no one, or very few people rather, have really done like robust analysis of this work. And it's also really difficult to do a sort of controlled study because you can't like look at a place, you can't like ask them to stop doing work for a certain amount of time. That would be unethical, just to see if shootings go up. And so you kind of have this, you know, natural imposition of like a control situation where you, where you're limiting the amount of work that can be done, and you can sort of see what happens when the work is not done the same way.
Now, I want to ask you a little bit about the economic implications of the coronavirus pandemic. A lot has been said about how working class people are most affected, the kinds of people who work in the service industry who perhaps have been deemed non-essential. And the argument has been made in the past by people who, again, it's hard to study this, but that gun violence has to do with economics, divestment, etc. Does what you found point in that direction, in that when money stops flowing in a particular area, whether it be because of pre-existing kind of racial biases and segregation or because of a pandemic, gun violence goes up?
Yeah, I don't know if it's safe to say it that clearly, at least for the coming for at least for the violence prevention organizations. So Forum for Life, you know, still has the funding that it had, that it was granted by the city, and is still sort of, you know, fully staffed in that regard. I think that the question, you know, the broader question that you're pointing to is like, you know, what are the root causes of gun violence, and are they being exacerbated by the coronavirus crisis? And I don't know that we know for sure what the root causes are, but I do think that we know with some certainty that the coronavirus is exacerbating those causes. And so, you know, on specifically related to the economics, I don't know. I know that certainly poverty will exacerbate violence in cities. You know, I know that grief and trauma from deaths as a result of the coronavirus will exacerbate violence in cities, or is at least likely to. And I also know that a lot of the communities where gun violence is most prominent are already low income, and Black, predominantly Black or other minority communities. And those communities typically have the highest proportion of essential workers, because these are people who work government jobs, who are, you know, doing essential sort of, like you were mentioning, like food service jobs or delivery jobs. And so they're also at the highest risk of contracting the coronavirus for that reason. And then in addition, you know, there's been numerous stories about this, but, you know, ProPublica had a really powerful story about Milwaukee as well, that was kind of showing that, you know, gun violence was hitting Milwaukee's Black communities much stronger and harder than it was hitting Milwaukee's white communities. And part of the reason of that was sort of what you're alluding to, this sort of confluence of variables that are a result of, like, you know, decades of systemic racism.
Very interesting. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Lake Effect on WUWM 89.7 Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Julian Haida, and I'm speaking with Champ Barton. He is a reporter covering community violence and the gun industry for The Trace. His recent article, which covers Milwaukee and the effects that the coronavirus has had on gun violence in Milwaukee and several other American cities, is called When the Shootings Don't Stop. Now, Champ, I'm curious a little bit about the shifts that we're talking about, that gun violence has gone up while perhaps other violence has gone down during the coronavirus pandemic in the last few months. Has to do in shifts where crime happens and where violence is applied. I've seen boredom invoked for gun violence in some places, kids being out of school, kind of not having your kind of normal routine, leading to violence. How much of that has kind of, have you noticed in the kind of reporting you've done in the last few months?
Like we were just saying, I think that there is a confluence of variables that are both systemic and behavioral. They don't fit neatly into any one sort of category. What you're talking about, though, with you know, quote unquote boredom and having a change in someone's daily routine. I have spoken to researchers who have said that, you know, it's very reasonable to conclude that, you know, not having a job or not getting, not having some educational program to be a part of, those sorts of interruptions to someone's daily life really do sort of hurt their chances of being away from violence, because we at least know that while you're at work, while you're at school, it's difficult to also be shooting a gun. I think the clearest way we can look at that effect, though, would be to look at the people who are already involved in these violence interruption programs. And the researchers that I've spoke with have emphasized to me that it does seem like when you have a person who is in a violence interruption program, so this is a person who has been involved in violence in some way, and someone has reached out to them and tried to intervene in that, in a conflict or in sort of a lifestyle choice, that getting those people involved in jobs, getting those people involved in school programs, does reduce their likelihood of engaging in violence. Now, that's not, I don't want that to be quoted as a sort of, you know, research finding, but that's sort of what researchers have suggested to me in our conversations.
I'm also wondering if you've noticed any changes in discourse around the use of guns in the last few months with regards to food shortages. People are saying they have to protect themselves. Even a lawmaker in Michigan felt the need to protect herself from armed protesters. Even the people who allegedly killed Ahmaud Arbery, which is a name that has been on the tips of a lot of people's tongues in the last week or so, they say they were protecting themselves. They thought that Ahmaud was running around the neighborhood trying to steal things. So is that something that you've seen come back on kind of all sides of this issue? Is people feeling the need to be vigilant and armed in order to prevent something bad that might still be coming with this coronavirus?
Yeah, so I think that I think there's like a clear racial divide in that feeling that you're talking about. I've done reporting on surges in gun sales across the country, and you know, this started sort of with Asian Americans along the West Coast buying guns in huge numbers. And the reporting that I did sort of found that that was mostly, or at least partially, because people were worried that of racist attacks as a result of the coronavirus. That quickly spread to being just a everyone who is anyone wants to go get a gun because there is this concern of what you're mentioning, like, you know, sort of social unrest. And the reporting that I've seen on that surge in gun buying has spread across, you know, racial divides. That said, I recall a conversation that I had with a professor of mine back in journalism school, who was basically talking about how, and this is a Black professor, and he was basically talking about how there is often an argument that guns, among like gun rights activists, that guns make you safer. And the way that this professor put it to me was like, we've been running that experiment in, you know, predominantly Black neighborhoods in cities for a long time. And I don't think that anybody who lives in those cities would tell you, I think everyone in this city should have a gun. Because what we're finding and what we see, you know, every day is that these having so many guns in these communities leads to more violence. If you had less guns in these communities, you would have less violence. And so I don't think that that feeling of I need to protect myself from this crazy social unrest has shown up prominently in my reporting in cities as it relates to city violence. That seems to be more closely tied to communities that have not had a problem with violence, and that people anticipate the violence will spread to their neighborhood, and so they buy a gun, you know, as a way to protect against that expectation.
So this phenomenon that we're discussing, that shootings have gone up during the coronavirus lockdowns, more or less, in cities, it sounds a little bit like President Trump's line that the, quote, cure is worse than the disease, that stay-at-home measures are intended to stem the spread of the virus are also leading to death in unexpected ways. And on the flip side, Black communities in America, especially in Milwaukee, as you've mentioned, have seen COVID's ravages firsthand. So how is that tension playing out? Wanting to have a kind of a prudent approach to staying at home orders versus keeping people safe. And do some folks want the state to reopen in order to stem gun violence?
Yeah, I mean, I can only speak from my reporting. I have not heard anyone who is anxious to reopen as a result of the coronavirus. There is a very reasonable concern that these like stay-at-home orders have caused an increase in domestic violence. There was a shooting recently in Milwaukee. It was like a five, I think it was a quintuple homicide. A man killed his family. So I've had sources in Milwaukee who have who work for Foreign for Life, who have sort of said, you know, this is one consequence of the stay-at-home order. At the same time, during the Wisconsin election, I don't think any of those people, in my conversations with them, were happy that everyone had to rush to the polls and be out and be around people. I think that you're pointing to a tension that is definitely there. It depends on this, on the, you know, side of the problem you're looking at. And I'm sure when there is an instance of domestic violence, that prompts everybody to think, you know, if we didn't have to stay at home, maybe this wouldn't have happened. But at the same time, I think that the loss of life as a result of the coronavirus sort of outstrips anything that you'll see from people staying at home and getting involved in violence as a result of staying at home. And I think that there are other, I think it would be unfair to look at that as a binary, when there are certainly ways that city governments could intervene and provide more resources and you know, better outreach to make sure that violence doesn't surge during the coronavirus while also making sure that people are staying home and staying safe.
The coronavirus fatalities in America are certainly staggering. So that's an interesting point. Thanks so much for joining us, Champ. Champ Barton is a reporter covering community violence for The Trace. His recent article, which covers Milwaukee, is called When the Shootings Don't Stop. Thanks so much for joining us on Lake Effect.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Champ Barton is a reporter for The Trace, a nonprofit newsroom focused on gun issues in America. He spoke with Lake Effect's Julian Haida.